Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network since 2009. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
Hello, friends. Welcome to Cutting the Curd. We're doing things a little differently this week. Our dear friend and former Cutting the Curd host, Diane Stemple, is being recognized by the New World Chapter of the Guild Internationale des Fromagères for her work in the cheese industry. For decades, Diane promoted artisanal cheesemakers from the United States and from abroad, first as a cheesemonger, then in sales, and as a brand ambassador. And of course, as a co-host of this podcast. Diane's niche was interviewing authors about their cheese-centric books. And she's a big reason why I am with you on Cutting the Curd today. Diane stepped away from Cutting the Curd about a year ago, and we want to take this opportunity to honor her as well by throwing it way back to 2010 when she was a guest of Anne Saxelby on episode 10 of Cutting the Curd. The topic of their conversation is a recap of the decade in cheese, which was 2000 to 2010. That decade was a big one for American artisanal cheese in particular. Diane and Anne held each other in high esteem and were good friends who shared a passion for cheese. We really hope you enjoy this time capsule and that you enjoy hearing Anne and Diane's voices.
It's Sunday afternoon at Roberta's, and you know what that means. It's time for Talking Cheese and Dairy and all the rest on Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Anne Saxelby. Our producer is Jack Inslee, and our engineer is Nat Wiener. The number to call in, should anyone have cheese-related questions during the next half hour, is 718-497-2128. So today on Heritage Radio Network, being the first Sunday of 2010, we're going to do recaps and rundowns of the decade that the British like to refer to as the noughties. That's N-A-U-G-H-T for the years between 0 and 10. I just learned about that. And to join me on Cutting the Curd today is none other than my good friend and colleague, Dr. Diane Stemple. Hi, Diane.
Hello.
Thank you so much for joining me. So I just want to sort of for a second tell you how Diane and I met. Diane and I met working at Murray's, working behind the Murray's cheese counter back in 2003 when I just started. Diane, I thought, was kind of the most fascinating of the cheesemongers because she was... Her real job was that she was a psychologist. Is it a psychologist or psychiatrist? I always get confused.
Psychologist. PhD. Okay. No medication.
Dang.
Talking cure only.
The best kind. And so Diane, you know, had a practice on Long Island, but would come in to Murray's once a week to work behind the cheese counter with me. And I just thought that was... kind of the best and most cool story. So how did you get into cheese, Diane? How did that come about?
Well, back in 2000, beginning of 2001, in the newspaper in the food section, there were notices about Artisanal was going to open.
Okay. Oh, Artisanal, the cheese bistro.
The fromagerie and bistro.
Okay.
Terrence Brennan was branching out from Picheline, and Max McCalman was going to head up the cheese program at Artisanal. And I just decided, sitting in my living room in Port Washington on Long Island, I just said, I want to work there. And, of course, I was a full-time practicing psychologist, suburban wife and mother, in love with cheese. Mm-hmm. Certainly, from always way back. Always way in back. Love. Okay. I fell in love with cheese on my honeymoon way back in Paris. But I just said, I want to work there. And my husband sort of scratched his head and said, why don't you do it? Mm-hmm. So I thought, well, I'll write a letter. I'll write a letter and say I want to work there.
How old-fashioned. That's so that's right. So nice. Well, and earnest.
Oh, it was before email.
Yeah. Or that's before not true.
Before I did email. So I wrote a letter, and I showed it to my husband, and he said, I think you're better in person. So I guess that was his nice way of saying bad letter. So then we went to Artisanal maybe the first month it opened, and it was really intimidating. I thought, how
it's
can I work here?
It's an imposing place. You know,
it was
very
noisy.
Grand.
It was crowded. It was French.
It's like just a big fancy bistro, like Balthazar. It's like very, right, very, right. Yeah, imposing.
How could I work there? It was impossible. So then, about a month later, April 01, my friend Hillary comes to town, and I say, let's go to Artisanal for dinner. This is where I want to work. So mm-hmm. She says, okay. Now, Hillary is makes me look like a wallflower.
Okay.
You know, she will talk to anybody at any time, anywhere. So, okay. So, we go to Artisanal. We're drinking Cosmos. That was back in the day of Cosmos. I still love them.
Were they born in this decade? It's very possible.
Maybe not. I think.
Definitely popularized, though, by Sex in the City and, you know, that whole scene.
Yeah, well, so it's 01, so you can still drink Cosmos in public.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so we're drinking Cosmos, and every man that comes to the table, Hillary says, who are you? Because, you know, they pay attention to women when they're alone, I guess.
Okay.
So finally, this guy named Mark Shea, general manager, comes up to the table, says, how are you ladies doing? We're like totally drunk by now. Hillary says, fine, this is Diane Stemple. She wants to work here. And Hillary gets up and goes to the bathroom.
Oh,
leaving
good
me there like, so he says, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to work here. I want to learn about cheese. And he says, he gives me his card, which uh-huh. I still carry in my wallet as a souvenir. Uh-huh. Mark Shea, if you're listening, I still love you. he says, call me Monday. I'll set you up.
Wow.
So
that's like a good friend who, like, you know, gets you talking to the guy that you like at the party.
Exactly. She was my wingman.
Yeah.
Yes. Exactly. So I call him Monday, and we play phone tag for about a few days. Friday, Thursday, somebody calls me back on my office machine where it says, hello, you have reached the office of Dr. Diane Stemple, and leaves this message saying, hi, this is Peter Kandel from Artisanal. I got your name and number from Mark Shea. I understand you want to come in and learn about cheese. So I get the message. I don't know who he is yet. And I thought, oh, Mark just, you know, gave me to some assistant. Some guy's calling me from, this doesn't even.
They have so many psychologists applying for jobs every week. You know,
exactly,
you're just another
right.
name.
And what is he thinking, doctor? Like, who is this person? So the next morning before I got back to him was Friday, and it was when there were still Diner's Journal. Oh, that's the dog. Diner Journal reviews of restaurants.
Uh-huh.
On Fridays, they had the early review of Artisanal, and it said Peter Kandel, Fromagère.
Uh-huh.
And I said, that's the man. That's the man who called me. He's like a Fromagère. Like,
whoa,
the Fromagère called me. So I immediately call him back, and he says to me, what do you want to do? And I say, I want to learn about cheese. And he says, how about Friday at 11? And I say, fine, I'll be there. And
you had a job.
And I went. Well, I didn't get paid.
But you know, were artisanal.
I went and I started lunch shifts, weekly lunch shifts, one day a week. And I did it for a year and a half.
Wow. And so then from Artisanal, you transitioned and switched to Murray's at some point.
I went professional at Murray's.
Wow. Legit.
I got paid.
Getting paid.
I got paid.
Wow. So apprenticeship at Artisanal, got paid at Murray's.
Right.
And now 10 years have passed. It's very funny. We've both been sort of into this cheese thing.
Right.
About the same amount of time.
That's true.
Had my aha cheese experience back in 2000 as well.
Uh-huh.
Visiting my friend Kenzie, who was then studying in Florence. Mm-hmm. I was a sophomore at NYU. And, you know, was just kind of like, hey, this, what is this cheese thing all about? I want to learn more about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know,
cheese just ropes us in.
And right. Then 10 years go by and all of a sudden,
right
here we are eating fried chicken at Roberta's and talking about cheese on the radio. Well, so in honor of the end of the decade and the sort of top 10 lists that have been going on here on Heritage Radio Network throughout the day, I thought it would be fun if we could kind of do a rundown of 10 of our favorite cheeses / experiences that go along with, you know, those cheeses, where we were when we ate them, why they were impactful and all that kind of stuff. Because there are certain things that just stick out in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
So should I go first?
Yes. You should. Definitely.
Oh gosh, I've got a list here. Okay. Well, I'll start with something recent because, you know, it definitely is very fresh in my mind. Back in September, when I was at the Slow Food Cheese Festival in Bra, which is a cheese festival, happens every 2 years. I tried some really fantastic goat cheeses made by a British woman called Mary Holbrook. Maybe I'm just thinking this because your name is Stemple, but I think it was called Stimpleton or something like that. It was a pyramid of goat cheese, like a French Valence, ash on the outside, just tangy and delicious and beautiful. And she also made a cheese called Cardo, which is really, really special. She it's a thistle rennet cheese, which is typical of cheeses from Portugal and sometimes from Spain. But she had actually gone to Portugal and harvested some thistles herself, and she had sort of made her own thistle rennet. And the cheese was beautiful. It was kind of a, oh gosh, the size of a Tome de Savoie, kind mm-hmm. of a medium-sized cheese, or like the size of the clock on the wall behind us, or your, you know, clock at school. And the rind was kind of an orangey brown, and the interior was just really, really lovely, creamy, kind of that creamier around the edge and then a little bit denser in the center. And because it was made with the thistle rennet, it had that wonderful fruity acidity and just kind of a barnyardy, goaty quality to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember thinking how cool it was that, you know, that sort of marriage of traditions and you know, and that caliber of raw milk cheese was being made in Great Britain.
Mm-hmm.
Just totally not part of their heritage at all, but this woman had kind of, you know, created it out of thin air.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of my recent favorites.
That's a good one. That's a good one. It is amazing when you go to England and you taste their raw milk and original cheeses that they're so delicious. They don't even need to deal with France.
Yeah. No, it's very true. And they've got, you know, some, their laws there are a little bit different. They're mm-hmm. allowed to sell fresh cheese mm-hmm. made from raw milk, which
right.
is, you know, enviable.
But they can't send it to us because it's too young. So we miss out on those cheeses completely.
It's true. Yeah. So if you're ever in London and you want to go to Neil's Yard Dairy and pick up some of Mary Holbrook's cheeses, you will not be disappointed. So what do you think? If you had to weigh in, what's a cheese experience?
Oh, there's so many. Let me tell you about one of my Neil's Yard Dairy cheese experiences. I was visiting the dairy because I had been hoping to work for 3D Cheese, who represented Neil's Yard Dairy in America, which I eventually did. But before that, I was visiting Neil's Yard, and I spent a day working at the Arches, which is their bigger facility where they store things and age things.
Mm-hmm. Which is very kind of imposing and British sounding. I love the...
Right. It's actually, the Arches are underneath a train. Those are the kind of...
The railway arches, yeah.
Yeah, that kind of arches. And in a kind of far-off neighborhood of London. So I'm working at the Arches for the day, you know, feeling completely inadequate and unprepared for everything they're having me do, except for cut cheese, which I've been doing, you know, at Murray's for some time then. So they give me this job to cut Oakleshield, which is a cheese that is very infrequently in this country. Sometimes it comes now, more recently, but this was in 2005 or 2006, I think. It's a cheese that William Oglethorpe, I think, got to name. It's a cow's milk, washed rind, pretty large wheel of cheese, which they also had me washing in the cave, and I almost dropped it more than once because it's very slippery when it's washed.
It's like, you know, trying to catch a grease pig.
Oh, and so I'm cutting it because they have a sandwich shop at the Borough Market where they grill Ogleshield and something else as a part-time venture. And I am in charge of cutting the weekend's Ogleshield. Well, I'm eating most of it because actually they had some of it had
Trier holes in it.
Yes, trier holes in it. And they had gone a little black, so they were using the pieces that they couldn't sell in the store to make for the sandwiches. So I had to cut around the trier holes so that I was allowed to eat that.
Yeah.
So I just ate my way through a couple of wheels of Oglesheald in the afternoon. And so that, I love Oglesheald. It's just very hard to get in this country and absolutely delicious.
Yeah, the toasted cheese sandwich, as they call it. We do the grilled cheese,
exactly.
They do the toasted cheese,
exactly.
And it is so good.
And you sell grilled cheese at the Brooklyn Flea.
Yes.
People are loving it.
Well, it was really fun. We're going to get started again next year when it's not quite as cold out as it is today.
Mm-hmm.
But, well, so I think we should each do another quick one. We're going to have to take a break in a minute or two. But one that's very quick for me, I feel like I have to throw an American in there because obviously I sell American cheese. When I was first starting my shop, I called up Lainey from Lazy Lady Farm and asked her if she would be so kind as to sell me cheese because I know that she's a bit of a, you know, she's very particular about where her cheese goes and she doesn't make very much of it. And it's kind of a privilege to be able to sell her cheese. And she agreed to ship me some cheese, which I was thrilled about. And then she asked me, did I know Michael Lee from Twig Farm? And I said, no. And she said, well, you have to. You should know him and you have to call him. So I called Michael, just sight unseen, and told him that Lainey said that his cheese was great and would he send me some. So not knowing really what I was going to be getting or getting myself into, he shipped me a couple of his wheels of goat tome, which are, you know, the name does not imply that it's going to be anything, you know, that exciting, but it is just amazing, amazing cheese. I had never had an American cheese like that. It's a cylinder of aged goat cheese, about 4 months old, with a really kind of downy coating of velvety kind of gray mold on the outside. And the interior of the cheese is quite white and semi-firm, and the flavor is just out of this world. His cheeses always remind me of pine needles. And I think it's because, you know, his goats are really out, you know, browsing, as he would say. They're always eating the sapling trees and the weird, you know, brambles and, you know, grasses that grow at his place. And just to taste that kind of complexity, that kind of a floral, grassy, pine resiny flavor in a goat cheese just stuck with me immediately. And I thought, wow, this guy is doing something really special. And it has proved to be thus for the last 3.5 years.
Right. Right.
So
do we've I have got time for an American?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We've got a minute.
I remember when I was working at Murray's in the old store and, some new American cheesemakers were coming in to give us a taste of their Rogue River Natural Rind blue cheese. And I can't remember if it was David or Carrie, but they came in and we were all lined up and I was feeling like I had died and gone to heaven. It was like, I was amazed that I was even in on this meeting behind the counter. And we tasted this blue cheese that I remember thinking, we've arrived. American cheese has arrived. This cheese is as good as Europe or better.
And it's true. And to demonstrate that, Rogue River Blue is now one of two American cheeses, raw milk American cheeses, that are actually being exported and sold at Neal's Yard Dairy.
And it
in
won
London.
Last year Best in Show at American Cheese Society.
That it did. Yeah.
So
well, I think it's time for a quick break. But when we come back from the break, we are going to keep talking cheese and the people in cheese that make it so fantastic.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network. Roberta's was founded in Bushwick in 2008 and has become one of the most iconic restaurants in the country. HRN made its home inside of Roberta's in 2009, and together they have become part of the DIY fabric of the neighborhood. Roberta's is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and serves much more than just the famous wood-fired pizzas. Their team dreams up new salads, pastas, and sandwiches on the regular. Roberta's Tiki Bar is alive and well in the back garden, serving up frozen drinks in the summer and hot toddies in the winter. Stop by the bakery and takeout spot next door for fresh breads, sticky buns, and pizzas to go. But Roberta's also extends beyond Bushwick, with multiple locations in New York City, Long Island, and Los Angeles. You can also find their frozen pies in grocery stores around the country. The spirit of Roberta's, like Heritage Radio Network, is everywhere. Here's to many more years of pizza-powered radio. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
My name's Ann Saxelby. I'm your host, and my guest today is Dr. Diane Stemple, the cheese doctor. If anyone out there wants to call in and ask Diane or myself a question, you can do so at 718-497-2128.
Only about cheese.
Only about cheese. Yes, it's true. If you're going to ask Diane about other stuff, then you have to make an appointment. So we didn't get through our top 10 cheeses, but I think it was a good start. And we definitely need to talk about some of the people that make this world of cheese kind of, you know, rock and roll and be what it is. So this is kind of a tricky thing to get into. I told Diane we're going to do our top 10 people in the cheese world, and that's just fraught with all kinds of difficulties.
Politics, hurt feelings.
Yeah, scandal. No, I'm just kidding. But so there are too many people to name, obviously, in 15 minutes, but we are going to go through a couple people who are really making strides and making some pretty interesting changes in the cheese industry. And I said that I would start. And my first person who I feel like is truly an amazing person in cheese is Hervé Mons. And he is going to be talked about in just a second, but it seems that we have a call-in, which we're going to take.
I'm on the call. Come on.
Hello?
Hello?
Hello. You're on Heritage Radio. You're on Cutting the Curd.
Thank you so much. I had a question for you regarding the use of organics on, among these cheeses.
Okay.
The cheesemakers, are they using organic type dairy products, or is it, they're still in a very conventional agricultural world?
Oh, yeah. No, that's a very good question. Organic is kind of one of those words that is definitely sort of a seal of approval. However, it's also kind of like, the world of cheese that we're talking about is kind of, it's not just black or white. It's not just organic or not. There's a lot of kind of gray matter in between. And while the cheeses that we're talking about, we're talking specifically about cheeses that are made on a small scale on small farms all across the world, sort of England, France, the US. And I guess the word that I use more often than organic is sustainable, which to me means that the farmer is caring for their herd. They're using antibiotics when the animals get sick, but of course not using the milk from those animals then to make cheese. That milk always gets dumped. They're certainly not using hormones, and the animals are very well cared for. They're out on grass in season. And that is kind of how I start to answer that question. Organic, it's of course a good and wonderful thing, but it's also been co-opted a little bit by bigger dairies that don't necessarily have their cows outside ever. They purchase organic grain. And so that's kind of it's a tricky question. But so while not all of our cheeses are certified organic, they're certainly made in a sustainable way with respect and care for the animals in the land. Thank you for your call in.
Can I add something?
Sure.
I think in the cheese world, organic does not mean quality. It just means organic and following those rules, which can be a very high quality cheese, but doesn't have to be.
That's a very good point. Yeah. So thank you very much for calling in. We always appreciate call-ins on the show. So I'm going to get back really quick to my my top 10 cheese person, who is Hervé Mons, who is a French man who actually kind of got me started before I opened my shop. He set me up with three stellar internships with goat cheese makers in the Loire Valley. And why I think Hervé is a very important person in the world of cheese is that he's doing more than anybody really to keep the tradition of artisan cheese making in France alive. He's going so far as to, when the villages and rural areas in France are kind of emptying out and the cheese traditions are in danger of dying, he is bringing in people from Eastern Europe and even from Vermont, who he is setting up to apprentice with these old cheesemakers and learn their craft and keep that alive. He represents, I think, about 200 or 300 cheese producers in France and is just doing more than anybody to sell those cheeses and keep the craft alive by selling them. So I love Hervé. Who do you love?
Well, love, I don't know. I think another top 10 person in the cheese world, definitely mirroring Hervé's philosophy, is Randolph Hodgson from Neal Shard Dairy, who has in England supported, helped, visited, nurtured the small cheesemaker and, you know, sold them in his shop. And he literally spends months on the road visiting, testing, giving feedback to all the cheesemakers in England, which I guess you can do it because England's small enough to drive around. And he also shares his knowledge with America and is just interested in helping cheesemakers survive and be sustainable and make a decent living in the whole world, I'd say. So he's had a massive impact in England and in America.
That's true. That brings me to my next cheese person, who is Matteo Keeler of Jasper Hill Farm, and now the sellers at Jasper Hill Farm. And Neal Shard Dairy is a huge supporter of the project, the sellers at Jasper Hill. They gave a ton of input about how, you know, the sellers should be conceived of and built. And so that partnership is definitely a really special one. But Matteo and his brother Andy have, I think, done more for the American cheese industry in the past 10 years. Well, yeah, I don't know. Probably their impact has just been huge. And I think that though the scope of their project is in Vermont, they've really set up a model that other people could copy and use. Their model is, you know, they have the sellers at Jasper Hill. They buy cheese from small cheesemakers across the state. They bring them to the sellers and age them there. And then they ship them out when they're ripe and ready to go. So basically, they're making the cheesemaker's job easy. They're making the cheesemaker's job simply to make cheese, which is what they're the best at and which is kind of the most important thing to focus on, especially when you're first getting started. And they kind of take care of all the nitty gritty in between, you know, the cheesemaker and the final consumer. So they're very important.
Now, I'm sitting here quietly because I just want to announce that, under full disclosure, which they always say in the New York Times, I'm currently working for the sellers at Jasper Hill, but I am not twisting Anne's arm right now here at the radio station. I do not have a gun to her head. So I, of course, you know, my bosses are on my top 10 too, but I don't know if it's appropriate for me to.
To toot
put
their
them.
Horns.
Right,
well,
right.
I will, you know, be completely shameless in
okay,
talking about
okay.
them.
So now I want to put some women on the top 10 list.
Okay, let's do
it. So I'm going to do two in a row, and
okay.
one might embarrass you, because one is Anne Saxelby.
Oh, come on.
She's very gracious and humble, I would say, but really in the cheese world, she is one of the rock stars, especially the American cheese world, because I don't know how many stores there are in America that only sell American cheese. Not that many. Correct?
That's true.
She has a very small shop at the Essex Street Market, and she sells all American cheese, mostly from the East Coast, and I guess Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
One foreign cheese, Parmesan Reggiano, and that's it. And everyone loves what she's doing and loves the cheese that she sells. And she is a personality, as you can see on the radio, in and of herself. So it makes it all work. It's a great place to go.
I'm like, red as a beet. Thank you, Diane.
Can I add another woman?
Please do. Please do.
My next woman was my boss, so I guess I have to do a disclaimer for that.
And she was on my list too, though. So once again, we balance each other out.
Good, good. Deborah Dickerson, formerly the owner of 3D Cheese and currently working for the Cowgirls, who may also be on the list.
The Cowgirls should be on the list.
Of the Cowgirl Creamery.
Peggy and Sue.
Right. We got more women every second.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Deborah Dickerson, I call her the den mother of American cheese. She's worked behind the scenes supporting cheesemakers in America, traveling with cheese in her pocketbook to give taste, to say to somebody, what do you think this cheese needs? Tell me, is it too salty? Is it aging too quickly? Should we change the temperature? And she has helped people communicate with each other through her for as long as she's been in the cheese world, which is, I'm sure, longer than both of us, maybe combined.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think the den mother is the perfect way to describe Deborah. She's so supportive and so positive, which I think, in a lot of the food world, you don't encounter that quite as often.
Right.
There's
a
little bit more intimidation or, the other tactics used, but Deborah is 100% positive all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's true.
She's great. So also on my list, were two people that we kind of already mentioned, but David Gremmels and his partner, Carrie at Rogue River Creamery. I think that they've sort of taken the lead, about getting raw milk. They're doing a lot of raw milk advocacy here in the U.S. To sort of maybe help relax or eventually change the law that stands right now about raw milk cheese having to be aged for 60 days. But they've also sort of taken it upon themselves to get their cheese into other markets. And they're currently exporting their cheese to Neal's Yard Dairy, which I think is very impressive and deserves some kudos. And what do you think? Can we get one more in there?
Oh, I think we have to. Well, I got two more big cheeses at least.
Okay.
Rob Kaufelt, our old boss.
Oh, yes.
For making Murray's what it is. And it's really been very instrumental in the American cheese movement and cheese in this country.
And I would say then, actually, I'll throw one more in there who I can't believe I should have mentioned him way earlier. Steve Jenkins, who was a guest on my show once and who is just a total inspiration. That man knows more about cheese than just about anybody I've met, and really did a lot to help educate Americans at a time when people were eating nothing but, sort of cheddar and Colby and blue cheese.
And I'll add my first big cheese mentor, Max McCalman, whose books have been, also very instrumental in communicating about cheese, though probably more European cheese than American cheese.
This is true. Yeah, Max, his book, The Cheese Plate, was kind of my, my go-to when I was first learning about cheese. And I still think it's one of the greatest books written about cheese, The Cheese Plate by Max McCalman, who was the fromager at Artisanal and still... And still is. He does a lot of education and stuff. So I think that's a pretty impressive, it's an impressive group of people.
Right. I don't know if we got to 10, but close.
Are we close? Is there anybody else on your list that we didn't
Let's
talk
see.
About?
Mike Gingrich.
Absolutely.
Pleasant Ridge Reserve.
Yep.
Yeah, we've neglected the Midwest.
We have neglected the Midwest. And Judy Shad, right up there with Mike Gingrich, the godmother of American goat cheese.
Okay.
I think she's pretty fantastic. So it's going to be pretty exciting to see American cheese in the last 10 years has kind of gone from, zero to, 180 or 360. I always forget whichever one it is. It's in the middle. It's just made tremendous, tremendous strides. And in the next 10 years... It's going to be really exciting to see what happens, because I think that, like you said, we have arrived.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, what did you say when we were inside? It starts with a B.
B.
Boomed.
Boomed.
American cheese is boomed.
And will continue to boom.
Yeah, it will be booming for many years to come. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Diane, and helping me do my rundown.
You're very welcome. It's been delightful.
And I hope you'll come back and join us on Cutting the Curd again soon.
Sure.
for listening to this episode of Cutting the Curd. Please make sure to visit us on Instagram and at heritageradionetwork.org. Also be sure to give us a 5-star review on your podcast streaming platform of choice. We appreciate your support.
Cutting the Curd is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries, like why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode. Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.